Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Fill her up!
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
We need to roll back the state. We spy on all of our own citizens.
Our prisons are flooded with nonviolent drug offenders.
If you want to know who America's next enemy is, look at who we're funding right now.
Every single one of these problems are a result of government being way too big.
You're listening to Part of the Problem on the Gas Digital Network. Here's your host, Dave Smith.
What's up, everybody? What's up? Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. I am going solo for this one. We are a day late and a dollar short. Isn't that how the sentence is? Yeah, sorry, a little bit late on this one. My sister had a baby the other day, so sorry, we were a little bit late on the show, but you know, family first. Family comes first. So anyway, congratulations to my sister. Beautiful baby boy she just had. Really amazing. Really amazing to watch her, you know, bring a child into the world and see all that beautiful stuff. Have kids, people. Have kids. Can't recommend it highly enough. Nothing brings you more joy in life than having a family. All right, so Robbie the Fire's out. No guest today. I just wanted to talk to you guys. It's going to be a little bit of a short episode because I have not slept much in the last couple days. And yeah, it reminds me of having a kid and how little you sleep, especially when you know, the delivery goes late into the night, which was the case with my wife and also with my sister. Anyway, so Donald Trump got impeached, I guess. That's the headline for today's show. You know, I know I've been talking about this impeachment a lot lately. It's kind of hard not to. It's like at certain points I'll be like, well, I think I've said everything I have to say about it. But then it's also kind of like, I mean, this is, you know, kind of historic. So it's hard to not talk about it, and I'll try my best to not, you know, just repeat myself and go over the same things because there's a few new angles on it that are particularly interesting. But so Donald Trump, the House voted to impeach Donald Trump, and it passed. It is the first impeachment in American history, and there's only been two others. But it's the first impeachment in American history that was done on a strictly partisan basis. So they got zero Republican votes. Now, it's a little bit of a technicality because I suppose Justin Amash did vote to impeach. I guess he left the Republican Party over this whole issue. But anyway, it's, you know, so you could almost count that as a Republican who voted to impeach. But, you know, he technically is not a Republican anymore. So either way, it would only have been one. And then it passed with all Democratic support. And it's the only time an impeachment has ever been purely partisan, which does say something. I suppose just that on its own doesn't prove a point one way or the other. You could argue that the Republicans are the ones being really partisan. Although I think in this particular case, it's just, I mean, it's the thinnest impeachment imaginable. And like I said, you know, even when we talked about the Bill Clinton impeachment, what Bill Clinton was actually impeached for was a little bit, a little bit silly. And it, I think for most people who look at it, they would go, well, I mean, you know, sure, he did technically lie. He did technically commit perjury or whatever, but he was lying about cheating on his wife. You know, it's not like he was lying about something that had to do with the job. I'd imagine that most men who cheat on their wife don't want their wife to find out. And therefore, you know, they're not going to be completely honest about that. It was like a purely, it was just to protect his own personal, you know, failings. And so, you know, there's an argument there that it's kind of silly. And is, and the thing that's kind of similar from the Clinton impeachment to the Trump impeachment is that you had this big special counsel investigation that came up with nothing. Although, to be honest, I think there was a lot more there to the Clinton impeachment with the Whitewater scandal. But they ended up coming up with nothing, and then you end up getting an impeachment for this totally aside issue that had nothing to do with what the original special investigation was about. And there's something about that that's a little bit kind of, it just feels wrong. Feels wrong, you know? However, in the Clinton impeachment, you could at least go, well, look, this guy committed a crime. Like, there's a crime here. I mean, he was disbarred. He was like, there was something here to point to. Whereas with the Trump thing, it's just, I mean, it's so thin. It's so thin, it's ridiculous. And the other thing, which I you know, I'm already violating my rule. I am repeating myself a little bit here. But, you know, it's like for, if you look at, you know, these Democrats who are, and the anti-Trumpers in general, who are gleefully supporting or gleefully bragging about how many people in Trump's administration have gone to jail or been convicted of crimes. And so many of them, like the crime that most of them have gone down for has been lying to the FBI or lying to Congress, and which is basically the same crime in a different context as perjury. It's lying. It's the crime of lying. So if you believe that these people should be thrown in jail, that their lives should be ruined over telling lies, well, Bill Clinton also committed that, and it's a much less serious thing to do to somebody to impeach them and remove them from being the president than it is to ruin their lives and throw them in jail. And no one did that to Bill Clinton. No one, you know, ruined him and threw him in jail. They just said, you know, we're thinking about not making you president, and then when you're done, either way, you can go make hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, doing some, you know, faux charity work with the Saudis. Anyway, so Donald Trump, so it passed on strictly partisan grounds, which, you know, however you feel about that, it certainly is an indication that this is not going to go well politically for the Democrats. You know, if you're going to impeach a president, remove a president, reverse an election, you would think you would want something that is so there's such an obvious violation that a lot of the country is like, oh yeah, this guy is has done something really wrong here. And if that's the feeling, then the Republicans who are in swing states, or even those who are in, you know, blue leaning states, would feel comfortable to be like, yeah, I can vote for impeachment here, because a lot of these people in the middle, you know, they get that something really fucked up happened here. The truth is that while the impeachment hearings were going on in the House, support for impeachment fell. It fell amongst Democrats. It fell amongst independents. And I mean, it was always pretty low amongst Republicans. So the truth is that most people, just in their own, you know, like people aren't legal experts or constitutional scholars for the most part, but most of them can have enough common sense to look at this and go, yeah, even if what Trump did there was maybe a little bit, okay, he kind of thought about maybe withholding military aid and or maybe pressuring the Ukrainians to investigate the Bidens, but never really did it. And it's not exactly clear that he was going to do that, but it seems like there was a little bit of a wink and a nod, like, I want you to investigate the Bidens. I want you to investigate the 2016 election meddling. And he ended up not doing it. even if you think there's a little something there that goes, yeah, he's definitely using the power of the White House to try to get what he wants. The idea that this is something that rises to the level of we should impeach and remove a president is a pretty hard sell. I think that's a really hard sell for pretty much everybody except those of us afflicted with Trump derangement syndrome, who would literally support impeachment for anything. For anything. You could find anything. The people who really hate Trump, like hate him with a passion, you could be like, we're going to impeach Donald Trump over an insensitive tweet that he sent, and they would be all on board with it. Like, all on board. I really do wonder. I mean, I'm obviously being a little bit hyperbolic, but I wonder, of the people who really fervently support impeachment, how far you could go. Like, what you could impeach him for, how trivial could you make the infraction to impeach him that they would still support it? Because I know you guys know as well as I do, there's a whole lot of people out there who would support impeaching Trump for just about anything, you could think of. But that's, you know, it's a statement about Donald Trump. It's a statement about the country and, you know, where we're at. They dug into this. I really have, and I've said this from the very beginning of impeachment, I have some, like, not that I have a worked out theory or anything like that, but I have a whole bunch of just like my lizard brain has just been, you know, going off since this thing started. And I think that there's something like deeper to all of this. It's not just what meets the surface. I don't know what the plan is here. I don't know if the plan was that they were just trying to shut down the Ukrainians actually investigating what happened in 2016. But there's a reason why the Democrats went forward with this. And it's not just as simple as they're catering to the left base or they're, you know, they're scared they're going to lose the 2016 election. This has just got disaster written all over it for the Democrats. And there must be something more to why they would want to go forward now and why they wouldn't even pick a more serious scandal. I mean, I've thought several times since this whole thing's been going on. I mean, I know obviously there's the stuff that I'd like to see Donald Trump impeached for, that I bet a lot of people who listen to this show would like to see him impeached for, you know, like you know, pick from the list, fucking, you know, continuing. The easiest one, obviously, is the war in Yemen, because specifically the Congress voted to end that and he overrode the congressional authority. And Congress is the only body that's really allowed to declare war. And, you know, it's a war of genocide. It's just fucking terrible. But, you know, the wars, the debt, all these other things that you'd want to see him impeached for. And of course, we talk about that because it's useful to point out, number one, what the most horrible things that a president does are. And number two, the fact that we all know, like, a lot of people will respond to me, people who support the impeachment, they'll be like, oh, but you're just deflecting because he could never get impeached for those things. And it's like, yeah, that's the point. These are the most horrible things he does, and he could never get impeached for them. What does that tell you about this whole system? And what does that tell you about how we should respond to him being impeached for this nonsense? So there's that. Now, of course, we all know they're not going to impeach him for that, because for the same reason that the anti-Trump people that you know, like, and I mean the crazy ones, not the principled anti-Trump people, which I think I would count myself in. But the crazy anti-Trump people, you know, they never go crazy about Trump for the war in Yemen, for continuing the war in Afghanistan and Syria and Iraq, for, you know, all the support of Saudi Arabia, of Israel, all this stuff. Why is it? Why don't they fucking go nuts over him for that? Why isn't he the most evil human being ever because of that? And we all know what the answer is. Because if they were to say that, then they're only one centimeter away from having to admit that Obama was also a terrible person. And Hillary Clinton was a terrible person, and Nancy Pelosi is a terrible person. Like you can't indict him for that without indicting the whole system. So then you lose your whole reason for being, your whole purpose, which was that Trump is this unique evil. If you say somebody's a unique evil, and you go, well, what's so evil about him? And you go, well, it's that he continued what the last guy was doing. That doesn't really work for the unique evil narrative. The truth is that Trump is evil for continuing the evil shit that his predecessor did. And the only thing unique about Trump is that he tweets like a dick. That's what's different. But if they admit that, then they feel like fucking children, which they are. So they won't admit it. But I think even if you grant that they were never going to impeach him for any of the stuff that actually threatens the system, like they're not going to impeach him for something where now the next guy can't get in there and keep wars going. But even if they had gone after him for like the emoluments clause or something like that, I think there just would have been a stronger leg to stand on. You know, if they had just gone like, hey, you know, Donald Trump is keeping these businesses. And there is for sure some shady shit to the fact that Donald Trump keeps these businesses. Now, this exists with every president also, but because Donald Trump is a fucking business mogul, it's a little bit more obvious with him. So, of course, like, right, like, what is, you see fucking Barack and Michelle Obama just bought like a $18, $19 million mansion. Isn't it really something? Isn't this whole racket just incredible? There's no racket like the state, man. It's just fucking incredible. These people who lecture you about privilege and equality and, you know, fucking the plight of the downtrodden. That's what they're all about. What do? They go, they can't even go live in a shabby $2 million home. They got to go for the fucking $19 million home, right? Like, and by the way, even funnier, it's on fucking Martha's Vineyard right near the fucking ocean. So all these people are so concerned about sea levels rising, but they'll fucking plunk down nearly 20 mil on a fucking home that they think is going to be underwater in 10 years if we don't act. Anyway, but so there's all types of, and you know, we talk about it a lot, but there's all types of these conflicts of interest. Like you see Obama go make hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, speaking to Wall Street bankers after they had these record high profits under the Obama administration. Then they give him all this money. He got big money, I think, from Netflix at one point, who he fucking passed net neutrality for. And there's all types of, yeah, of course, the Clintons enrich themselves after leaving the White House, and the Bidens enrich themselves after leaving the White House. And, you know, this happens with pretty much everyone you could think of. But with Trump, there are some business conflicts that are a little bit more blatant. So, like, Donald Trump will have these hotels that all of a sudden, you know, like, Saudis start fucking staying at all the time. And it does seem fairly obvious to me. It's probably the same exact thing that all of this shit is. It's the same thing. We all know. This is also why the whole investigating the Bidens thing, like, I don't really know what the purpose of it was going to be, because I don't actually think, this is just my guess, by the way, I know some people have done like deep dives into Ukraine that are deeper than my knowledge on the subject is, but my guess is that probably there wasn't technically anything illegal about Hunter Biden working for that Ukrainian energy company. There's actually not a law against it, but it's so obvious what it is. And any normal person can look at that and go, yeah, that's such bullshit. Because obviously they weren't hiring some guy who didn't speak the language, who didn't have any industry experience, because it was just Hunter Biden just happened to be the best man for the job. Really? Does anybody actually believe that? No, of course not. They wanted to fucking gain favor with the vice president of the United States. That's all. And if you go, hey, well, look, we're fucking paying your son $80,000 a month or whatever the job was, that buys you some favor with him. That's the same reason the Saudis weren't donating to the fucking Clinton Foundation, because of their love of charity. They want to gain favor with the Clintons. And this is how the whole game works. This is also, by the way, why all that campaign finance reform bullshit that left wingers love to talk about, because it sounds so nice. All that Bernie Sanders, we need to get the money out of politics. It's all bullshit. It'll never do anything. So what? So you limit the way they can directly contribute to a politician? You don't think they can get around that? You don't think they can fucking donate to some fucking charity, or they can fucking pay, they can offer someone in your family some gig, or they can pay you back on the way out? They'll always be, if government controls this type of power, there's always going to be bribery, of course. Which is, you know, like, so Bernie Sanders can say this is legalized bribery, and it's like, yeah, it kind of is, but so is Hunter Biden being hired by this company. It's all legalized bribery. But I do think, at least from what I know about it, that it probably is legal. But that being said, Donald Trump does have these businesses where foreign interests are spending a lot of money there. And I'm sure that in part they're doing that to gain favor with Donald Trump. And even that, if you tried to impeach him for that, it just seems like there'd be more of at least like a straw to grasp onto. This is just such nothing. It's nothing. Anyway. Yeah, by the way, if there's somebody who wants to, if there's somebody out there who you guys think I should debate on this topic, that this impeachment is bullshit and that libertarians shouldn't support it or anything like that, please let me know, because I've seen, like, you know, some people in social media disagreeing with me, but nobody who really makes sense to, like, have on to debate it. But if you think there's someone, yeah, let me know. All right, guys, let's take a quick second and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is Mudwater. Mudwater is the ultimate coffee alternative, packed with organic ingredients that will add natural energy and focus to your morning routine. The Mudwater team is not mad at coffee, they're just disappointed. They were sold the dream that a huge dose of caffeine in the morning was going to allow them to do more and do it faster. But the shitty sleep, the jittery rise and crash caught up to them, and they decided to make something better. With 1/7 the caffeine of coffee, Mudwater leans on cacao, mushrooms, Ayurvedic herbs to give you energy and focus without the jitters and crash. Each ingredient in Mudwater was added for a specific benefit: turmeric for inflation, cinnamon to help suppress sugar cravings, cacao and chai for mood and energy, lion's mane for focus, cordyceps for physical performance, chaga and reishi for immune and stress response. Just take a scoop and brew it into hot water and have a morning ritual that's more than just a vessel for caffeine. Check them out at mudwater.com. That's M-U-D-W-T-R.com. And if you use code DRINKMUD, all one word, you'll get 15% off your new morning ritual. That's Mudwater, M-U-D-W-T-R.com, and the promo code is DRINKMUD for 15% off. All right, let's get back into the show. Okay, so one of the other really interesting things that came out of this that really, I think, hurts the Democrats politically is that now, you know, basically the Senate Republicans have come out and been like, and led by Mitch McConnell, but several others of them have been like, this thing's going to die. Like, this is dead on arrival in the Senate. So Donald Trump ain't getting removed. It's not happening. This is going to be sent over by the House. It's going to die in the Senate, and that's going to be that. And there's a few different factors at work there. Number one is that it you could argue, certainly, and I've seen, you know, mainstream media types try to do it. You could argue that, well, this is the Republicans being partisan because they're not even going to hear this thing out. But the problem with that argument is that there's no new evidence that's going to be presented to the Senate once it goes into the Senate. They heard it out with the rest of the country when it was all being, you know, taken care of in the House. So they already have, like, looked into all that shit. They see what the you know, articles of impeachment are. So the fact that they've made up their mind, it doesn't really damage them. But what it does is it damages the Democrats politically, because you go, now you're cast as just wasting time. You're just wasting time and taxpayer money. And instead of focusing on any issue that anyone cares about, like, very, very few people, with the exception of, like, you know, the Trump derangement syndrome crowd, or with the exception of, you know, like, your, like, woke Twitter, or someone you know who's like a fucking sophomore at a liberal arts college, nobody's actually voting on, like, did Donald Trump ask the Ukrainians to look into Biden? People are worried about, like, their fucking healthcare, sending their kids to college, keeping their job, getting better wages, fucking the opioid epidemic. Like, there's all these things that people really care about. None of them are actually. This is so now the Democrats are wasting their time on something that no real voters actually care about, and you know is a waste of time. You know it's not going to actually do anything. And then they of course hide behind the Democrats, which is one of the funniest things of this whole development, is the Democrats hide behind the line of, like, well, it's our constitutional duty, which, you know, all of a sudden the Democrats are like, well, but we just, our love of the founders and the original intent of the Constitution, that's what motivates us every day. This is why, you know, they go from the fucking, they transition literally from one day, it's like, we need to tear down these statues of these old racist white men, to all of a sudden be like, but the founders, this is the party that believes in, like, activist judges and executive order and all this shit. But now all of a sudden we have to, you know, worry about the letter of the law of the Congress. So 95% of what the Democrats want to do would not be done if they gave two shits about the Constitution. But in the final blow that's really going to hurt the Democrats, I think, is that now Nancy Pelosi, I think she realizes, because say whatever you will about Nancy Pelosi, you know, you can say that she's not honest. You can say that she's not attractive. You can say that she wakes up first thing at 4:45 a.m. every day and drinks three cups of fetus blood. Sure, those are all fair points. But she is politically savvy. You know, give her that. I mean, this woman has been Speaker of the House, I mean, off and on, but she first got the job, what, in 2006? I mean, she's been, you know, she's the first female Speaker of the House, lost the job, got it back. There was a whole lot when the Democrats took the House in 2018. There were a whole bunch of people who were like, oh, it's time for new blood and we're going to get her out of the way. And she locked that shit down, got herself right back into the Speaker role. So she knows politics. And I think she knows that she's in a tough spot here, that she's in a very tough spot, particularly for the Democrats who are in purple and red districts. And so what she said is, she was like, she's now saying she's going to hold this up before they send it over to the Senate to see what the Senate process is going to be. Because I think she knows that as soon as she sends it to the Senate, it dies, and then this is bad politically for her. So now she's trying to hold it up. The problem is holding it up looks really bad politically too, because you're like, now you're like, basically you just want the talking point that Trump was impeached. I just don't see, maybe I'm wrong, I don't see this as anything other than politically a big loss for the Democrats. Okay, so one more thing that happened with the vote yesterday that was really, really interesting, and probably actually, at least in this latest chapter of the Trump impeachment, which is, you know, in many ways been a process that began in January of 2017, but the most interesting thing to me in this latest installment was our homegirl Tulsi Gabbard. And Tulsi Gabbard did not vote for impeachment. Now, she also did not vote against impeachment. She voted present, which is weird. I've always thought it's weird that you're even allowed to do that when you're in the Senate. You know, it's like, this is your job. You got to vote. Pick. Either you think we should impeach him or you don't. But she voted present, so she did not go along. She was one of the only Democrats. So there were two Democrats who voted against both articles of impeachment. One of them, Jeff Van Drew from New Jersey, just switched over to being a Republican. He switched parties. So again, kind of like the Justin Amash thing, I don't even know if that counts. I don't know exactly what that is. But there was one other guy, Colin Peterson from Minnesota. He voted against impeachment. And Jared Golden of Maine voted for one impeachment article. But Tulsi Gabbard, who's running for president, obviously, she voted present. So she's the only one who's running for president on the Democratic side who doesn't just, you know, full throttle support Donald Trump being impeached. And again, I think this is a great move for Tulsi. I actually think I would say just vote no. I mean, you know, why not? It's basically to the anti-Trump base, it's the same thing anyway. It's not like one is any worse than the other. You might as well have voted no and at least go for it. I mean, you at this point, and I mean this strictly like in a Machiavellian fucking marketing, you know, perspective, not even like what the right or wrong thing to do is. But from at this point, if you're Tulsi Gabbard, your best angle is like product differentiation. You don't go in there and be like, oh, but I'm just like you on this issue. I mean, what's the point? You're losing that game. So you might as well be like, well, here's why I'm a radically different choice than these other Democrats. But Tulsi is now, which is really fucking hilarious, is trending on Twitter, hashtag Tulsi Coward. Although I must say, even when I looked it up, and she's been trending all day, everything I've seen has been people, you know, using the hashtag but defending Tulsi. So I don't even know, you know, but this might also be like Twitter's algorithm, like showing me people that I'm more likely to follow or that follow me or something like that. I don't know. You know, hashtag Tulsi Coward is trending on Twitter, which I thought was just the perfect like little example of how of the upside down, like how backward woke Twitter has things. So Tulsi Gabbard, now say whatever you want to about Tulsi Gabbard not voting to impeach Donald Trump, but to call her a coward for doing it is insane. I mean, you're saying that she didn't fall in line with her party on this strictly partisan impeachment vote, that she didn't fall in line with every other Democrat who's running for president. Like, just the fact, even if you think she's wrong, right? Just the fact that she took a vote that's going to have her trending on Twitter, calling her a coward, proves she's not a coward. Right? Because she did something that she knows she's going to take a lot of heat for. She knows the entire establishment, all of the, you know, corporate press and all of the Democratic establishment and all of Hollywood and all of the media, like they're all going to give her shit for this. So if she was a coward, she would have voted to impeach. Now, again, that doesn't make her right. That alone doesn't make her right. But to call her a coward is just so backward. I love that. It's something about the kind of like radical left in this country that's one of their just most infuriating but also hilarious qualities, is that they think they're brave. Like they really do believe what they're doing is bravery. Like there's some, you know, a kid on a college campus who stands up and, you know, says like, we have a problem with rape culture, and then gets everybody to applaud for them and then feels like they were brave. And you're like, well, here, let me tell you something about bravery. If you know before you say something that everybody in the room is going to applaud what you say, then it's not fucking bravery. That's not what bravery is. You know, I mean, I don't know if saying anything is really that brave, but if you say something that you think might get you booed out of the room, that's braver than saying something that you know already plays to everyone's preconceived, beliefs. But of course, yes. So they call her a coward, because it's so, you know, it's so cowardice to support Donald Trump. It's just something. I remember I actually loved. You remember what Bill Maher got kicked off of television for? I thought it was such a great point he made, and he said it. And I'll tell you that was somewhat brave of him to say, but it was right after 9/11. When he had that old show, Politically Incorrect, on ABC, and he said that he was like, Bush keeps calling the terrorists cowards, and he goes, are they really cowards? Like, I mean, you know, they're evil, but if you get into a plane and fly at full speed into a building, is the word for that coward? He goes, I mean, we sit in submarines and lob cruise missiles from a safe distance. Who's the real coward? And nobody was ready to hear that at that point. But I mean, come on. But instead of just, you know, being offended by it, and then, of course, the irony that his show, Politically Incorrect, got canceled for him being politically incorrect. Or maybe that's not irony. Maybe that just makes sense. But, you know, people were outraged. But can anyone really argue on the merit of that? Like, can you really tell me that there's not, you know, like I said, too, I've talked about some of these, like, fucking alt-right guys or whatever, or the, you know, the white nationalists, ethno-staters. And I've said for a long time that you go, you know, say whatever you will about them, they've got balls. I mean, they'll take a position that could very likely ruin your life in, you know, modern day America. That doesn't mean they're right, but, you know, like, it's like people would be like, oh, they're fucking, are they cowards? I mean, if they were cowards, they'd probably say something that just goes along with everybody else. All right, guys, let's take a moment to tell you about our awesome sponsor for this show. Of course, I'm talking about Heshi Socks, which are the perfect gift for stocking stuffers or secret Santas. The brand new collection has been released, and they are just incredible, beautiful, new styles, new colors, the same amazing feel. For those of you who are new to the podcast, I've said it many times, Heshi socks are my favorite socks. Best socks I've ever owned. If you're tired of your feet hurting in your dress shoes after a long day of work, go to HeshiSocks.com. They're going to solve this problem for you. Most fashion and dress socks are expensive, they're poorly constructed, and they provide zero protection. Not Heshi socks. Heshi socks are cushioned in the heel, foot, and toe. They have arch support in the center so your feet don't slosh around in your shoes. They're made with breathable, high-end Pima cotton and are antimicrobial, so they kill the stink. Your feet are going to feel good. They're going to smell good. They're also designed to stay up. They have stay-up technology, so there's no more pulling on your socks all day long. Just incredible. Best socks I've ever owned. Go to HeshiSocks.com, H-E-S-H-I, socks.com, and if you enter the promo code PROBLEM30, You're going to get 30% off your entire order. Fashion, basic, ankle socks. HeshySocks.com. The best thing to ever happen to your feet. Go check them out now. HeshySocks.com. All right, let's get back into the show. Anyway. So Tulsi Gabbard, she put out a statement. And it was, you know, a little bit ho-hum. It's like kind of how Tulsi Gabbard is. She doesn't like to come off too radical. And I do think that... I think it's a struggle for her, which, by the way, one of the things that came out of this Tulsi Gabbard trending thing that I noticed is that Tulsi Gabbard follows me on Twitter. So I don't know when that where that came from, but she follows me. My guess is that that's not actually Tulsi Gabbard. It's someone who some staffer who's running her Twitter. And I did say I've gone back and forth with some people on her campaign. I know Brian reached out to some people on her campaign, and I've emailed back with a few of them, and they've said they're interested in having her on, but then they just kind of never got back after a while. And you know, she doesn't have to come on my show. I mean, she's more than welcome. I'd love to have her on, but you don't have to come on in order if people in her campaign, obviously, or someone, if not her, is aware of me and what I do. I'll say I've offered many times unsolicited advice, and I'll continue to offer this. But I think one of the issues that Tulsi Gabbard has is that she doesn't like to come off too radical. And you see this in all of the debates. She always wants to come off like, look, this is let's just be reasonable and come together. The problem is that she is, by definition, in the radical slot. So I think you kind of have to own that at a certain point. And it doesn't mean you have to be like me. Like, you don't have to be a dickhead and, like, curse and scream and shit like that. That's just, you know, that's my style, baby. But it does mean that you have to be willing to take radical positions and own them unapologetically. And so her video was more or less like, I couldn't in good conscience vote for or against impeachment because there was wrongdoing, but you know, impeachment is such a, you know, important thing to do before an election, and it was done on strictly partisan grounds, so I can't support an impeachment on partisan grounds. But I did. The problem is that does start to smell like you're a little bit afraid to just take a position, and you're not. Like, she's not in her actions afraid to take a ballsy position. So just fucking say it. I mean, look, either you think this is impeachable or it's not. Which one is it? And we all know what the fucking answer is. And here's the truth, right? Here's what I tend to think. And what I think most people should get at this point is that it's like, why? Ask yourself, why do you think Tulsi Gabbard isn't supporting this impeachment? Why do you think it is that Tulsi Gabbard was unwilling to do something that would have in many ways been less of a headache for her and just vote yes to impeach? Why doesn't she support that? Well, could it be that maybe the one candidate on stage who actually saw combat in the fucking war that the CIA lied us into, okay? The one person who was actually... Now, okay, she wasn't like fighting people. They call her a combat vet. She wasn't like fighting, but she was in a medical unit in a very dangerous area at some of the worst points in the war in Iraq. And part of being in a medical unit is like, if you're in a medical unit in the military, you really see the cost of war. Like, it's not just like this idea, like it is in a lot of our heads, myself included. It's not just this idea, and maybe you've seen some pictures on fucking the internet. Like, she was right there watching, you know, like people that she knew. And she was in the medical unit seeing the worst of the human cost of war, okay? And this is a war that the fucking CIA lied us into. And then she's running against all of these other wars that the CIA is lying us into. The CIA, by the way, has been supporting Al-Qaeda, right? In this, you know, fast forward now, after she's in the war in Iraq, the same people who she's fighting against, this insurgency that Al-Qaeda is flooding into, she now sees the CIA supporting those guys in Syria. So while the CIA is supporting the same Sunni radicals that were killing, that she watched the people, you know, get fucking maimed up by, now this she sees the CIA supporting all these other guys in Syria, and then Tulsi Gabbard goes to Syria to talk to Assad, right? This is the thing she gets bashed with the most, that she goes to Syria to talk to Assad to be like, hey, is there any way that we can try to de-escalate and not let the CIA get us into another war? So here you have Tulsi Gabbard, the only candidate on the Democratic side, who doesn't support these CIA wars, is it really that much of a mystery why she wouldn't support the CIA impeachment? Which is what this is. That's a fact. This is a CIA impeachment. It was literally a member of the CIA who was the whistleblower who started this whole impeachment. And of course, it was the CIA and the FBI and Department of Justice who started the whole, you know, Mueller investigation and the whole, you know, Trump-Russia narrative and all of that stuff. But so, of course, you know, if you see the candidate who's against the fucking the CIA wars and is now also against the CIA impeachment, you know, seems like maybe she's a little bit more hip to what's really going on than some of these other people, or she's just not evil. And so that's why she's opposing this. Now, I could be wrong about that, but I'm pretty certain there's a connection there. So here would be my advice to Congresswoman Gabbard. Say it. Just say it. Look, you're already, your whole thing, your whole brand, your whole reason for being is that you have the courage to say these things that are the truth. So say it in no uncertain terms. And if you're fucking, like, if you're afraid to say it or afraid that something really bad's going to happen to you or afraid that you're going to be fucking, you know, just slammed by the press or that this isn't going to go over well, well, guess what? You're already risking all of that. It doesn't matter if you say it. See, here's the fucking thing that's so funny, right? You might think to yourself, well, I don't want to, like, just go out and say that the CIA did this, because then maybe the CIA is going to come do something bad to you. But guess what? If you just say, we were arming Al-Qaeda in Syria, the fucking CIA knows who the fuck you're talking about. If they're going to do something to you, they'll already do it just for saying that. So it's not like you risk anything more by just saying it. It's just being like, the CIA are the same people who are torturing people and lying us into war and supporting Al-Qaeda. I'm not going to support their impeachment. It's like, you're not risking anything more. And if you're worried that you're going to get, like, trashed in the corporate press, well, I don't know, Tulsi, I don't know if you've turned on the TV or picked up a newspaper lately, but they're all calling you a Russian agent. You're already at maximum level getting trashed in the press. The fucking last nominee of your party said you're doing the bidding of Vladimir Putin. They're already out there saying, like, the worst things you can say. They might as well. Tulsi's first question at the next debate. I mean, she's not doing the next debate, but if she does another one of them, Tulsi's first question at the next debate might as well be, "Are you now, or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party?" I mean, they're fucking. They're giving her the treatment. So what's, why not? Why not? I mean, what the hell do I know? I'm just some fucking idiot comic, but I just say, why not go? Look, my whole reason for running for president is because I've seen what the CIA has gotten us into. I've seen how the deep state has lied us into these wars, and now I see them lying us into an impeachment, and I just won't go along with it. And then go hardcore, go Ron Paul, go. I'd be right there trying to impeach Donald Trump if they were doing it for anything worthwhile. You know, why not? That's what I say. I say go for it, Tulsi. There's my unsolicited advice. Thanks for the follow on Twitter. Okay. So there's the there's my take on the latest with the impeachment. I got to say, I do. I love politics. I mean, I hate politics, but I love politics. It's just fun. It's fun to watch the show. All right. There's something else I wanted to talk about. It's a little bit off topic and a little bit random, but it was just something that I saw on Twitter that's really, it's been sticking with me, and it's been on my mind. And I thought it was something, and it pertains to like libertarianism and the new right and the Groypers, as they call themselves, Nick Fuentes, who I had on the show. It was a tweet that I saw from Mike Cernovich, who I like very much. I'm a fan of Mike Cernovich, and I thought that hoaxed documentary was just incredible. So I highly recommend it if none of you have checked it out before. I'm going to try to get Mike Cernovich on the podcast one time, because I think he's a real interesting guy. Who I think we'd have a good conversation. We did an episode of Red Eye together back in the day, back when Trump was running for president in 2016, on the now defunct Red Eye. And then we've, like, messaged back and forth a few times. And anyway, I like that guy a lot, but I follow him on Twitter. And I just happened to see him tweeting about Nick Fuentes. And then he shared, like, I don't exactly know what this is. It looks like it's like a text message, or no, not text messages, but like some type of like private chat. And I don't even know who this was between. But he just shared these messages from Nick. So I almost feel a little bit weird, but I mean, he tweeted it out publicly, and it's not like it's anything embarrassing or damning. It's just him making arguments. But the arguments kind of, you know, stuck with me. So I wanted to talk about them a little bit. Let me just start by saying this. So I like Nick Fuentes. I thought we had an interesting conversation when he was on the show. I think he's like a smart kid, and he's talented, and he's really kicking up dust lately, and it's been interesting to watch it. Nick is like, whatever. I think he's a very smart kid, very talented broadcaster or you know, pundit, whatever it is you would call it in today's age. He pisses a lot of people off. And I do think he says some things that are stupid and wrong, but I also do treat him like, you know, look, he's a 21-year-old, and he's not supposed to be like for me, if that makes sense. Like, I'm not a fan, like, in the sense, like, I don't watch his show regularly. I've seen a couple of videos that he's done, and it's just, I don't know how else to say it. It's not for me, and I don't think it should be for me. Like, I'm a 36-year-old father, married guy. I'm supposed to look at a 21-year-old and be like, I don't exactly get it. That's like how you're supposed to feel. But I also think that so many people are so harsh on him. It's like, you know, okay, so if he said something fucked up here, he's 21 and speaking into a camera with thousands of people watching. Do you remember what you said at 21? I don't know. It's like, yeah, so maybe he gets some things wrong. Who cares? Or maybe he says some offensive things. I don't know. I say stupid offensive things all the time, and I'm fucking, you know, 36. So it just doesn't bother me on that fundamental level. And maybe that says something about me. Maybe it's just like the way I look at all of these things. I think there's a disconnect. It reminds me of, you know, some discussions that I had with other people in the libertarian world, particularly with Nick Gillespie and with Nick Sarwak, talking to both of them about the issue of race and racism. And, you know, I'm really not, and there's a lot of right wing, you know, types who don't like this about me, but I'm not like a racialist. I'm not somebody who places a huge amount of emphasis on race. I don't talk about race that often on the show. It's just when it comes up and it seems like, okay, people are making this argument, what do we think about this or whatever? But I don't know. I mean, I don't think race is everything. It's not nothing. It's something, you know, it's like, it's kind of nature, nurture, biology, culture, all of these things exist. And to pretend any of them don't is kind of silly. And I immediately don't like when something is made a third rail and it's like, you're not allowed to talk about that. That never sits well with me. It's like, no, so I'm going to. So don't tell me that. I'm a fucking man. I say what I want to say. I can discuss ideas. And if you just like immediately when someone starts discussing ideas are like Nazi, racist, it's, you know, go fuck yourself. I don't know. Just doesn't even rise to the level of deserving a better response than that. But I've never quite had the allergy to racism that so many people in the mainstream have. Like, I have an allergy to violence, aggression. That really bothers me. If somebody is advocating, you know, violence towards some group or something like that, then I'd be like, yeah, that is fucking wrong. That, to me, I thought was the center of the whole libertarian business. Like, we're all about the non-aggression principle, right? So if somebody is advocating violence, then you're like, okay, yeah, that's fucking wrong, and you should disagree with that. But the point is that the whole state apparatus is that. And so if we're going to look at that, this is why I would always say the thing, and this is why I said to Nick Gillespie back on Thaddeus Russell's podcast when we did that whole thing that a lot of people enjoyed, was I was like, I mean, if we're talking to libertarians here, like we're a couple libertarians having a libertarian conversation and we're talking about racism, it's like, okay, well, look, let's just say the really unpopular thing that we all know is the fucking truth. which is that, like, you know, he's talking about how Murray Rothbard had some complimentary things to say about David Duke. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't like David Duke either. But Nick Sarwak had some complimentary things to say about John McCain. So, by the way, who's worse? Who's worse, John McCain or David Duke? Now, John McCain, now here, and by the way, do I really need to spend a whole bunch of time telling you how I don't like David Duke? When David Duke, even just the name, all it invokes is like evil guy. That's what everybody thinks when they hear the name David Duke. Everybody's already bashing this guy. It's like, yeah. Okay, so I kind of agree with a lot of what they say. I mean, I think some of it's kind of, you know, a little bit overdone. Like, he's not the most dangerous fucking man on the planet. But yeah, he's kind of a racist and doesn't like Jews or whatever. It's like, oh, okay, fine. I don't like that. Obviously, if you listen to my show, you'd already know that's not my thing. Like, I don't know. You guys know me. You listen to me all the time. So obviously, I don't like that guy. Or I'm not like that guy. But then John McCain, on the other hand, who's a fucking mass murderer, who's, like, you know, responsible for hundreds of thousands of corpses, including, you know, like many, many, like, children and women. That guy, he dies and he's praised by the entire establishment. Everyone, all of the energy of how much the whole world hates David Duke, that whole world loves John McCain. So why don't we take the more important stance and saying, hey, fuck that guy. Like, that's what really matters. Now, Mike Cernovich was making the point that he was basically like, yeah, you know, Nick Fuentes has a lot of shit that I don't like. But there's a lot of Nicks in this conversation. Keep them separate. Nick Gillespie, Nick Sarwak, Nick Fuentes. All very different. But so Cernovich was saying, like, yeah, Nick Fuentes says a lot of shit I don't like. But, you know, when Ben Shapiro was his age, he was talking about, like, exterminating Palestinians and all this shit. But then he'll turn around and blast Nick Fuentes for some stupid thing he said, which, and none of it's really as bad as that. Like, anyway, so that seems, to me, this all seems kind of obvious. And one of the things that kind of, and I like Nick Gillespie, and I love Thaddeus Russell. Like, I like those guys. But it is interesting, like, when the topic of race comes up, and they're so, like, it's like you have to be a racial egalitarian. If you're not, you're just, like, a bad person. Like, you have to be anti-racism. And this is why I always, and maybe part of it is just my contrarian nature, but part of it is also, like, I don't like weak arguments. And so I'm like, well, what do you mean racist? Like, what does that actually mean? Does that mean, like, does it mean, like, you're a horrible person and you want to see violence done to other people, or you believe that someone's like one group is less than human and you fucking want, you know, are you saying you want them to, like, be rounded up and kicked out of the country, enslaved, like something horrible like that? Like, okay, yeah, I guess we should all be together that's really evil. But that's not really what the term racism means today. What the term racism could mean very easily would just be somebody who's just like, you know, I'm not going to be violent toward anyone or do anything, but I don't like this group. Like, I don't like them. Now, that would classify you as being a racist in just about anybody's book. And that's not me. I mean, I'm just not that. I'm like a Jewish kid from Brooklyn. Like, I'm not that guy. But if somebody is that guy, I don't think that's the most evil thing. It's like, yeah, okay. Well, I mean, maybe it's ignorant, and then if it is, then I guess we should be able to convince them, or we should just have a superior argument or something like that. But if somebody isn't hurting anybody else, but they just kind of go like, yeah, you know, I wouldn't have any, like, so let's just say it's some guy who's like, I wouldn't have any black people in my home, not really my cup of tea, I wouldn't go to, like, a black-owned business, that's not my thing, I don't really like them. It's like, all right. Well, I mean, if we're going to be libertarians here, then let's be honest and say, that's his right. Like, that's that guy's right. He has the freedom to fucking do that, and nobody should force him to do anything else. And not only that that's the right thing to do, but also there's some bad consequences when you force people to integrate in a way that they don't want to. Then you end up getting, like, worse things, you know, a worse reaction overall. It's like the same, it's like the psychological phenomenon when you repress something and then it reemerges in a way uglier form. So anyway, I guess I just don't have an allergy to that the way other people do. And it also bothers me that, like, from a libertarian perspective, that the people who have such a big allergy to, quote, racism, very, very often, like, not always, but, like, 99% of the time, are the ones who totally support state aggression, which is way, way worse than fucking, you know, mean thoughts or mean words even. Okay? It's way different. And that's why you have the dynamic we have today where fucking, you know, people will denounce racism and then support wars in the Middle East. So you, if somebody says something bad about Muslims, they draw more heat than somebody who bombs Muslims. Like, this is so bananas. So fucking bananas. You think about how many people, you know, but before he was even president, hated Donald Trump for the way he talked about Muslims. And yet the CIA, who like tortures them, they get a pass in these people's mind. So that's like, how do you not look at that and be like, this is fucking craziness? And what's the, is if the libertarian response to that is to just step into the conversation and go, yeah, racism's really bad. Like, well, then what's the point of you? Why are you even here? What are you adding to this? Like, we libertarians, I thought we're supposed to be fucking ballsy. I thought we had this worldview where we see things in a whole different way than the fucking mainstream. And if we're coming into this conversation, why would we not add that? Like, why would, like, not infuse that into the conversation? It just seems, like, it seems insane. So anyway, maybe that's, this is all just me. I still haven't gotten into what I saw about this tweet, that, but I just want this, like, in the, you know, to set it up with this, so you kind of get where I'm coming from. But this stuck with me, and it bothered me a little bit to hear. But I thought it was something that I was like, yeah, you know what, like Fuentes is making a good point, and it's something that libertarians have to grapple with. We have to attempt to deal with this. So Cernovich tweeted, people who only see the well-deserved criticism Nick Fuentes receives for some indefensible comments, aren't seeing that he and other Zoomers don't care about said big government socialism talking points. He's hitting an economic message that almost no one else is. And here's the tweets, or not the messages from Nick Fuentes. He said, probably the worst part about, quote, socialism sucks ideology from Conservative Inc. is that it's totally ineffective for Zoomers. It's political suicide. The Cold War ended 30 years ago. Zoomers weren't even alive at the same time as the Soviet Union. Nobody under the age of 30 gives a shit about big government. The socialism-capitalism dialect is ancient. It's not even relevant anymore. That dichotomy simply does not describe the world we live in. This is just a boomer anachronism. Young people literally don't own anything and are looking at a life of debt and wage slavery. We are coming to terms with the consequences of globalism and industrial technological society. Virtually all forms of authentic identity, community, and tradition have been vaporized. This is the world that Zoomers... hold on, it cuts over the other screen. Shoot. This is the world that Zoomers... Oh, shoot. Fuck, I lost that part. No, this is the world that Zoomers live in, I guess is where he's going with that. Of all the things I'm concerned about in my future, big government isn't one of them. We have the biggest government in the history of the world. How would you even measure the size of government? Is it spending, personnel, constitutional authority? It's a completely nonsensical term. And even if you could come up with a metric, it would be irrelevant. Imagine telling some underemployed 25-year-old college grad in Ohio that government spending as a percentage of GDP went down this year. Oh, cool. By the way, I can't afford health care. Nobody cares about Ronald Reagan. Fuck the free market. Ben Shapiro should be taxed at 100%. If that makes him leave, then good. And that's the more or less the argument that he's making. And I think there is something to that. And I don't mean that I agree with it. Obviously, I don't. But I think that what he's saying is, you know, there's something really there. And I also, you know, I talked about this before with a couple of different libertarians. Like, I remember I was talking to one guy at, I think it was at when I debated Nick Sarwalk, or actually one guy in the audience who yelled out, because I asked the room a question at one point. I asked the room, do you think that the liberty movement is doing better now than it was in 2012? And someone said, yeah. And I was like, are you crazy? And then went on a whole thing about how it's not. And I remember talking with at the Mises at Mises University with a guy. He was the guy who ran the anarchy ball account. I think they got kicked off. I think he's on like not Anarchy Ball now on Twitter. But and he was arguing that that he thought the Liberty Movement was doing better now than it was in 2012, 2013. And I just thought, I mean, like, and by the way, I'm not like shitting on, I like both those guys very much. It's just like, I don't know. I don't know what world you're living in if you think the Liberty Movement is doing better now than it was then. It's just not. And we had a lot of energy amongst young people, and I feel like we've lost a lot of that, and that there are so many people now. I hear from so many people who are like, yeah, I used to be a libertarian, and I've moved more in this right-wing direction. And then there's a lot of people who used to be a libertarian who moved into some like left weird direction. But part of it is like, you know, if you don't recognize you have a problem, you're not even going to try to solve the problem. So I don't know what to say to people who don't recognize that there is a problem, that the Liberty Movement hasn't been gaining steam the way it was in the Ron Paul days. And I think there's lots of factors as to why that is. But this, what Nick Fuentes is touching on, is something. There's something there that we really got to deal with. And so part of it is that, like, he's right about Conservative Inc. He's right about them. I mean, they talk about this battle between socialism and capitalism, but what does that even mean? Because they're basically socialists too. I mean, what do you mean? Government ownership of the means of production? Well, in that case, nobody's really a socialist except Venezuela. And even they're not even socialist on that level. But then if you talk about like capitalism being laissez-faire, well, none of Conservative Inc. ever really supports that. It's just rhetoric. They just say that. They never cut spending. They never really dismantle any department or, you know, like roll anything back. They don't have the courage to do that. So what the fuck are you even talking about? And there's a real problem, like what he was saying. If you're talking to Zoomers, to young people, right? Here's a problem that libertarians have. And it's the same way that you have a problem. If you're talking to somebody who, let's say you're talking to somebody who doesn't pay any income tax. Let's say they don't pay taxes. They don't make that much money. And so they don't pay taxes and they're on welfare. They're getting government benefits. And if you talk to them and you go, hey, I'm going to cut your taxes. That's not really that appealing to that person because they're like, well, I don't pay any taxes. And if you go, I'm going to eliminate the welfare state, they're like, huh, that's how I eat. So I'm not really that drawn to that message. You know, like it's hard to sell a message of cutting taxes and rolling back welfare to somebody who doesn't pay taxes and is on welfare. Now, not to say there's no other way that a libertarian could appeal to someone in that situation, but you got to admit there's a problem there. And if you look at the Zoomer generation, right, these 20-year-olds today, a whole lot of them, it's like, well, big government is just an obvious inevitability. It's been there always. And I get to where there's something about the Conservative Inc., like the mainstream conservative movement. What's infuriating about it is they'll be like, you know, they'll go right along with every George W. Bush program. But then Obama gets in and they're like, oh, you got to worry about big government. And you're like, motherfucker, we already have big government. We have the biggest, most powerful government in human history, as Nick Fuentes correctly points out. And now with the Zoomer generation, you're talking to people who don't own anything. Probably won't own anything in the near future. I mean, you imagine, you know, being like a kid that's coming out of school with $100,000 in debt, and you're grabbing a job at Starbucks, and a house costs $500,000. When do you think you're going to own a house? How real of a possibility does that seem like? Right? Like, okay. So what? Oh, you got to be. And then, you know, if you're just talking about like the property ownership and things like that, it's like, well, I don't know, I'm not owning shit, so can you at least fucking, and then if someone like Bernie Sanders is like, well, I'll wave a wand and get rid of that 100 G's, yo, that might be a lot more appealing than somebody saying I'll lower your taxes. So like, motherfucker, I work at Starbucks, I don't pay taxes. Like, I don't know, there's $20 out of my paycheck that's fucking missing. I got 100 G's in debt. This does nothing for me. So that's there is something that we need to pay attention to there and actually try to focus on how we can talk to people in that generation and in that situation. And I just don't think that, like, I know a lot of libertarians are almost like, well, we'll just write them all off because, like, they're racist or something like that. And it's like, I don't know. Like I was saying before, that just doesn't really click with me. And also, what the fuck is racist? It's like, who's not racist? You're telling me the left isn't racist? They racialize everything. It's fucking, I mean, just because it's anti-white doesn't mean it's not racist. But so I guess what I would start with if I was going to like respond to this, right, is like if I were talking to, you know, so I get what Nick Fuentes is going to say. Well, what does socialism even mean? How do you even define socialism? And what does big government even mean? I mean, what metric is it? Is it, you know, the amount of employees? Is it, you know, government spending? Is it any of these other things? And I would just say, well, I mean, it's all of it. I mean, government does exist, right? So there's different ways to measure it, but how powerful it is, what the government does, has an effect on society. And so it would be smart to look at these things. Now, if you're talking to these Zoomers, it's like, oh, well, they can't own anything. They can't do any of this shit. It's like, okay, yeah, you guys are getting screwed. In a lot of ways, you guys are getting fucked over by this system. So what is this system? What is this system, and what is it doing to you? What is it? What is the system doing? And what is it? And why are you fucked over like this? Why is it that your fucking grandfather could fucking own a house? That your great-grandfather? Why is it your great-great-great-grandfather could own a fucking house and you can't? Who's doing that to you? Why is the system like this? We are so much more. We have so much more wealth and technology and you know, all this, these benefits of a modern economy, and yet you still can't achieve the same basic fucking thing that your great-great-great-grandfather could? So what's going on there? Well, what is the government? Like, what does this powerful government do? Is that helping or hurting? Well, what the biggest part of our government, as Nick Fuentes even points out, the biggest part of the biggest government that's ever existed is the entitlement programs. That's the biggest fucking part. It's the entitlement programs by far. It's spending wise, by far the biggest part. Okay. And what are the, I mean, what is Medicare and Social Security? It is a wealth transfer from young to old. That's what it is. Not only did they fucking leave you in this whole fucked up situation, but they are still transferring money from young people to old people. So this wealthier group of old people who lived through all those times when you could afford a home, who are living in their home that they fucking bought, you know, decades ago, those people, they're fucking ripping you off. And why is it that there's like no, what was the, wait, how did he phrase it? He said, young people are literally don't own anything and are looking at a life of debt and wage slavery. It's like, well, the debt, I mean, how did you guys get into such college debt? Why is college so expensive? Who's loaning the money? It's the government. It's all the government that drove up these fucking prices. That's the whole system of trapping you into debt is it's all done by the government. This is your enemy. You want to solve the problem? You have to defeat your enemy. And then the other thing that he says, virtually all forms of authentic identity, community, and tradition have been vaporized. And this is a point I've been driving at more and more. And it was something that we talked about when Jacob Hornberger was on the show. By the way, the kids like this should fucking support Jacob Hornberger. I know that doesn't seem like the natural fit for a lot of them, but he's the only one talking about he's the only one talking about abolishing those entitlement programs. He's the only one talking about abolishing the student loan program. That's him. And in terms of vaporizing all sense of community and identity, it's like, yeah, dude, it's not a coincidence that that happened with the rise of the largest state ever. It's not. The state put the church and community and all of these things out of business. You want to actually fucking deal with getting back a sense of community and identity? Abolish the welfare state. Abolish the fucking welfare state, and then it's going to fall down to churches and organizations and communities who, by the way, are going to have their own standards that they want to impose. They might impose them voluntarily, but who do you trust? Let me talk to these, you know, kind of right-wing populist kids. Who do you want to be imposing the moral standards on people who get handouts? You want it to be the church, or you want it to be the state? Think that one through. So it's an interesting point Fuentes brings up, but I think it's really misguided. All right, we're going to wrap there. Thanks for listening. Be back on Friday. Peace.